quick call to the House Finance Committee meeting order. Today is May Day, May 1st, 2006, 8:45. For the record, we have Representative Moses, Representative Kelly, Representative Foster, Vice Chairman Stoltz, Representative Hocker, Representative Weirich, and myself, Co-Chairman Meyer. On this morning's schedule, we have three bills, just to make sure everybody's on the same page. Senate Bill 265, Bonds of the Bond Bank Authority. Senate Bill 291, Municipal Harbor Facility Grants. And then we will take up the tobacco bond, and we'll have a presentation by the tobacco bond folks, Alaska Housing, actually. And they'll kind of give us the range of the dollar that we can expect for the tobacco bonds, and then we'll hold that until this afternoon. We're still putting together the list of projects to include with that. So that's the schedule for this morning. Is there anything else to come before committee before we get started? Okay. If not, let's go ahead and go to Senate Bill 265. And shows here Miles is. You're not Miles?
I am not Miles. Okay. You got the prettier face from the Senator Stedman office this
morning.
That's
super.
And we appreciate your flexibility, Mr. Chairman.
Happy these days.
For the record, Kim Carno, staff to Senator Burt Stedman. I'm delighted to be here before you to present SB 265. I was joined by Devin Mitchell from the Bond Bank, and I believe that he will return imminently to answer some of the more technical questions.
Before we get started, I know the schedule also says House Bill 291 and House Bill 504 today, but we're waiting for the Senate versions to come on those, and they're both on the Senate floor today, so those will be tomorrow or the day after. So if you're here for that, I just wanted to let you know. Sorry, Kim.
SB 265 seeks to increase the bond authority of the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank from its current statutory cap of $500 million to $750 million. The last time the bank's bonding authority was increased was in 2003, when it was increased from $300 million to $500 million. The Alaska Municipal Bond Bank helps municipalities by lowering the borrowing costs for the participants. The bond bank achieves this result by pooling bond issues, creating economies of scale, and leveraging the borrowing power and creditworthiness of the state of Alaska. Since its inception in 1975, the bank has helped Alaskan communities secure over $800 million in financing for public works projects. Over that same time, the bond bank has returned $26.9 million in excess earnings to the state. This year, the bond bank will be returning a $652,000 dividend to the citizens of Alaska. Last year, the authority issued $123 million in bonds to Alaskan communities, and in the process, saved those communities $16.7 million in issuance and interest costs. For example, they were used for school construction in Kodiak, Petersburg, Sitka, and Ketchikan, harbor improvements in Adak, a hospital in Juneau, street improvements in North Pole, an ice rink in Palmer, roof repairs for the Anchorage Performing Arts Center, and refinanced at lower rates outstanding bonds for Fairbanks, Cordova, Unalaska, and the Northwest Arctic Borough. In conclusion, as of this month, the bond bank has approximately $80 million in pending applications and only $50 million in borrowing capacity. Without this increase, those communities will not be able to take advantage of the program. That completes my presentation of the bill. The Department of Revenue is here to answer technical questions, and I thank you for your support of this legislation.
Thank you. Any questions for, is it Carno?
Yes.
Ms. Carno. Okay. Okay. Seeing none, let's go on then. And Devin, did you, you're good? All right. Okay. Public testimony. Don't have anyone sign up for this bill, is it?
No.
Okay. Any amendments? Any discussion? Comments?
Can we hear from Devin?
You want to hear from Devin?
Sure.
Mr. Mitchell.
My name is Devin Mitchell. I work in the Department of Revenue.
I am the executive director of the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority, and of course we also support the legislation. The cap increase is a reflection of the communities of the state of Alaska taking on capital infrastructure development at the local level, replacing some of the historical capital budget expenditures of the state of Alaska, and still allowing for those local improvements that create the quality of life in the state of Alaska at the most economic cost possible. And if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them at this point.
Let's see, Mark, question?
What is our credit rating right now when we issue bonds through the bond bank?
The bond bank obtains ratings at this point from Moody's and Standard & Poor's. Moody's recently upgraded the bond bank credit from an A2 to an A1, and Standard & Poor's has us at a straight A. And so at this point, we would be lobbying Standard & Poor's to consider the A+ to mirror the Moody's rating. Mm-hmm.
And what are, Mr. Chairman, what are the ratings based upon? Some community wherewithal or the states? Or what's that?
Through the chair. The ratings are really a combination of things. There are different ways that rating agencies review bond banks. The main bond bank is rated AAA, which is higher than the state of Maine, which is a AA state. And the reason for that is the diversity of borrowers in their pools. They have a lot of small communities that borrow $200,000. In the state of Alaska, we have a lot more limited pool of folks, communities that have the ability to borrow money. So we have about 28 communities in our pool. So the rating that we achieve is based in part upon the credit diversity of the pool and a pooled reserve feature of the bond bank's borrowings, but in large part on the moral obligation of the state of Alaska. The pooled analysis is a little bit, the value of that is diminished by the largest borrower in the program at this point is the Northwest Arctic Borough, which has the ability through a default to deplete the reserve. And so there's a pooled reserve with about $30 million in it with the main bond bank program. And if the Northwest Arctic Borough, which currently has about $70 million outstanding, were to default, that would fully burn through that. Most of the communities, that $30 million would totally pay off their debt if there were no appropriations or anything. And so that has a negative ratings action or consideration when looking at it from a pooled perspective. That's offset by the moral obligation, gets us that high investment grade rating.
Mm-hmm. And two other questions. The pension obligation bond bill that's moving through the legislature, will that have any relationship at all to the Municipal Bond Bank Authority?
Through the chair, the bill would allow the bond bank to facilitate transactions that would be issued through a subsidiary of the bond bank, whether or not those transactions would have the moral obligation of the state of Alaska backing them is uncertain at this point. But in any event, there's no negative ratings actions that I've heard of for the main bond bank program through emissions.
What I meant was, we last raised the authority in 84, and then in 2003 and before that 1984, we're going to increase it by $250 million, and this is a short period of time. I mean, the curve is quite steep on what we're doing. Do we need to raise it more, since if you have $90 million in the pipeline, if we don't increase it, you're not going to be able to finance all those bond requests, according to your testimony or letter to Representative Senator Stedman? So my question is $750,000 enough? And if we're going to do any sort of pension obligation, do we need to raise the limit to reflect that new responsibility?
Through the chair, the legislation that you're referring to has an exemption for those type of obligations from this cap, and so there wouldn't be an impact. As far as the $750 million goes, there was a cognitive recognition that there would potentially be a need to come back to the legislature. I personally believe that while that can be an arduous process, it's valuable. There is a moral obligation associated with these bonds that are issued. There is a state tie-in, and to have a $250 million increase, and it's a rolling number, the $750 million, it's not static, that you've issued $750 million and you're done. So as bonds are matured, you have capacity returning. I would believe that the $750 is sufficient and that the other bill won't impact the program in the next several years.
Anything else, Representative Warwick? Okay, Representative Hawker.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to preface this with I'm fully supportive of your bill here without a doubt, but I'm just curious if you have a comment on what's changed in the past year and particularly in the past 90 days. A year ago, and I didn't drag it out for this morning, but, I've got the letters from the department and from the governor stating that it's absolutely inappropriate for us to expand any state debt obligations. And 60 days ago, I had Commissioner Corbis, or give or take a few, 60, 90 days ago, I had Commissioner Corbis in my office adamant that it would be inappropriate to expand the municipal bond bank's debt capacity. What happened the last 90 days that turned him around?
Through the chair, I'm not certain.
Ask him or you can answer. Thank you very much. Okay, maybe I'd ask the Department of Revenue's guy back here.
Okay, anything else for Mr. Mitchell? Okay, anything else on this particular bill? Okay, see, there's a couple of fiscal notes. $50,000 in 2007. All right. Okay. There's nothing else. Representative Foster.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and move SB 265 out of committee with the attached list of notes with individual recommendations.
Objections? See none. The bill 265 passes out of committee. All right, with that, I am going to turn the gavel over to Representative Stoltz and go downstairs to do the press bill, really, here for a half hour or so, and then be back. So we'll do 265, oops, sorry, 291 next. House Senate Bill 291. Kim's back again. All right, hold on just a second.
Yeah, you're right. Is this the one that you were waiting?
Bill before, have we? Okay, so I don't know if there's people lined up to testify. Oh, yes, we have had. This is the...
Is that the companion bill?
We had the House bill, yeah. Okay. And we did take quite a bit of testimony on that. I don't know if there... Is there anybody online to testify? Somebody quite. Okay. But we'll go ahead and take testimony from them. Assuming your bill is just like the companion we had in the House, but if you would go ahead and refresh our memories of what this bill is about and what it does.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First off, thank you for your work on SB 265 on behalf of the office. Again, my name is Kim Carnell, staff to Senator Bert Stedman. As the chairman has correctly indicated, you have already had the companion bill in front of you on the harbor facility grants, so I'm just going to do a couple quick highlights and be available for questions. SB 291 seeks to create a municipal harbor facility grant program to address deferred maintenance and capital upgrades to harbor facilities statewide. It creates a 50-50 capital matching program, the reuse of the state share of the watercraft fuel tax and the fisheries business tax. These fund sources are appropriate because the coastal communities, the very communities that will benefit from this grant program, generate them. SB 291 requires that the municipality demonstrate its ability to take full financial ownership of the harbors in order to qualify for the grant. This is a one-time infusion of money to bring deferred maintenance up to date. Municipalities are eligible for one grant that may not exceed $5 million during a fiscal year. Individual harbors are only eligible for one grant under this program. Harbors are our roads to resources. We ask for your support of SB 291, and I'm available to answer questions.
So each community that has harbor or harbors is able to access one $5 million grant?
Individual harbor, through the chairman, Representative Wyrock, individual harbors are eligible for one grant under this program. A municipality may have more than one harbor and thus could qualify for each of those harbors up to the $5 million cap for each of those individual harbors.
So that's, again, if one community has one harbor, they're available, they can avail themselves of one $5 million grant.
Through the chairman, Representative Wyrock, under this program, that is correct.
Okay. And then if they, so I understand this, if they have one harbor that needs $100,000 of work and one harbor that needs $10 million worth of work, they can apply for two $5 million grants and use the one grant for the $100,000 repair and the remainder of that rest of that grant for the $10 million repair to the other harbor? Is that how it would work?
That is not my understanding of how it would work. You have to individually apply for a grant based on your individual harbor program, your plan for that individual harbor. So if that project did not rise above the $1 million used in your example, that harbor would not be eligible for more than that amount.
And then the terms of the grant, who defines the terms of the grant in terms of payback to the lending agency, which is what, the state? Department of Commerce and Economic Development? Or who's the granting agency?
Through the chair, Representative Wyrock, it would be handled. It's a matching grant, so you take the portion that the state is putting forward and you match it with your own community's funding. It's not.
I see.
It's not like a credit card where you would be paying that back.
So, Mr. Chairman, the grant is a pure grant, a payout from the state that the community matches, with no obligation back to the state. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Wyrock, that's essentially correct. That is why there are very specific terms on how you would qualify for this grant in order to prevent misuse of the money.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions?
Final thing, when does it expire?
Chair Wexner Rydock, I do not believe that there is an expiration date. As of right now, it is essentially a discretionary program to begin with, because the language in there leaves it up to the legislature. They may appropriate the funding, so it's entirely possible that it doesn't start this fiscal year. So as for an end date, essentially, as long as there is money in the funds available for these grant applications, the program would continue.
Representative Hawker.
Ian, thank you, Kim. Oddly enough, there was a bill, something similar to this before us earlier. It's a bill that at that time I'd expressed reservations on the approach. And in this particular bill, again, as it's come to this time and place in the site, I'm going to be definitely supporting this. But in the context of my previous reservations, I sincerely believe we would be better off as a state just stepping up to the plate and putting a statewide transportation bond before the public that would be a broad-based bond on both land, sea, and air transportation. But at the moment, I don't see that before us or imminent. So, in this case, I'm going to support this bill as a direction, but I still just want to stay on the record as saying I think we'd be far better off addressing our land, air, and sea transportation issues in a more macro approach. But this is certainly a very valid micro approach to the harbors issue.
Thank you,
Representative Harper. Any other questions from the committee?
Yeah, I had
Representative Weinrich.
Is there any intent by the sponsor to exclude areas that may not be known as harbors, but more as boat launching or dock facilities? Would that be included in the purview of the bill?
Through the chair, Representative Weinrich, the initial intent of the bill sponsor and the legislation is to deal with harbors that have been transferred from the state to local communities. The grant program does make provisions for other types of capital improvements and new construction, so it would not be the intent that there be an exclusion, but you would still have to meet the requirements of the grant program. It would have to be municipality, would have to own it. So you're talking about just a privately owned dock. I do not believe that would qualify under this.
Have to be related to municipal government in an incorporated or municipal boundary. Would that also be a requirement?
The way this is set up through the chair, Representative Weinrich, municipality that owns a harbor facility may submit an application for the grant.
Okay. Again, the harbor facility, it could be broadly defined to be a boat launch or dock, depending on what the interaction is between that community and the state and what their plans are for that improvement.
Through the chair, Representative Weinrich, what the legislation says is municipal harbor facility grant to be used for construction, expansion, major repair, or maintenance of a harbor facility. I think that you would have to qualify under the terms of the grant program.
So the question, though, is harbor facility. Is there any desire by the sponsor to exclude dock or boat launch if that is otherwise considered a harbor facility by the entity seeking the grant?
Through the chair, Representative Weinrich, I believe that the bill sponsor would like the legislation to pass it as it currently defines.
I'm not looking for an amendment. I'm just saying, is there any desire to exclude that? I mean, it's broader, to be considered. A lot of communities have boat launches, you know, where you put your boat down a ramp and there's a couple pilings and a place to tie up. And a lot of times, places like this may not consider that a harbor, but places like they have that kind of harbor do consider it a harbor. So I don't want to, I'm looking to have you say no, there's no intent to exclude that kind of facility if that's what the community believes is a harbor from the purview of the bill.
Through the chair, Representative Weinrich, I do not believe that there is an intent that was not the focus of the legislation.
Do you not believe that there was not an intent?
I do not believe that there was an intent to exclude the types of projects you're talking about.
Okay.
However, it was not part of the impetus for the legislation or the development of the grant requirements.
Okay, so it may be included. It may be dependent upon the interaction between the municipality and Department of Transportation when they seek the grant from the DOT. The DOT may have discretion to include that.
The chair, Representative Weinrich, I can only tell you what is in the legislation and what the intent behind the crafting of the legislation was. I believe I've answered your question to the best of my ability.
So you don't know about the intent? See, it's not in the bill, and I don't want to amend the bill. I want you to say whether it could be or couldn't be part of the intent of the legislation to include that de minimis type of harbor.
Through the chair, Representative Weinrich, I believe your explanation of how the interaction between the municipality and DOT would have to occur is likely correct.
Okay, I guess that will be the biggest tooth I can pull out of you. That's good.
I think that's probably the best we're going to get between two lawyers.
Do you have wish to elaborate any further on that discovery motion by
Mr. Chairman? I think I'll wait for the legal briefs.
I think there's some valid point. No, I think there's some valid questions you're asking.
You know, not every community in Alaska is different. You all think about them differently. I mean,
right.
some people call a harbor a dock or a boat launch, and some people don't.
Maybe DOT can spread shed a little light on this if there's somebody from here. Any other questions for Ms. Carno? So we'll wait in the wings. Is anybody from Department of Transportation here? You want to come home, you want to come up and try to see if you can shed some light on Mr. Wyrock's questions? Representative Wyrock's questions?
Yes, sir.
Identify yourself for the record.
I'm Victor Winters. I'm the State Harbors Engineer.
I'd have a seat.
Mr. Chairman.
Through the Chairman, Representative Wyrock. We have indeed transferred several boat launch facilities as part of the Deferred Maintenance and Transfer Program, so they would be eligible.
Okay. Mr. Chairman. So is it right then that this bill is looking to provide money to those facilities that were transferred by the state to communities? Is that sort of the limiting kind of analysis that you do?
Through the chair, Representative Wyrock. The way this is written, they get the first priority, but similar type facilities, I guess once that list is fully taken care of, then similar type facilities could be taken care of through capital appropriations.
Through this program?
Through this program.
Okay, so they wouldn't necessarily have had to have been transferred by the state to a local entity. They could be already constructed by a local entity on their own dime and in need of repair facilities, and then that community could apply to DOT, and once DOT has already taken care of the facilities that were transferred by the state to a community, then they would look at these as a lower priority.
Through the chair, that's my understanding, yes.
Any other questions for Mr. Winters? Thank you. Thank you for coming up.
Thank you, Tom.
Anybody from the public or other departments wish to testify on this? Please come. Mr. Stone?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John Stone, President of the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators. I will be very brief this morning, and I did not bring the old harbor wire, so I will spare you that today. At the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators, we're comprised of 27 communities throughout the state. Obviously, we're strongly supportive of this bill. We would like to see this move through so that we can go about the business of trying to restore Alaska's harbor infrastructure that was transferred to us. We believe the harbor system is very important to the state from an economic standpoint. We house the commercial fishing fleet. We are also a platform for small business creation. Every year I have several new small businesses start up within my harbor system, and I'm sure that's the same throughout the state. So I'm here to answer any questions, and that's what I have.
Would you have the same response as the DOT gentleman did on Representative Wyrock's question, or any elaboration?
Yes. All kinds of harbor facilities have been transferred, launch ramps, docks, the traditional boat harbor. So the way I read it is all of that would be eligible under this program. And I would agree with Mr. Winters that the first priority, according to the bill, is for the infrastructure that was transferred. And then after that, any new project or other type of project would be eligible for consideration of funding under this program. And then, of course, the qualifications are on page 3, where the community would have to provide 50% funding. Excuse me, I think it's that page. Where is it? Page 2, so the community would have to provide 50% funding. The municipality would have to provide adequate property loss insurance. And the municipality would have to have an adequate preventive maintenance plan.
Any questions, Mr. Stone? Thank you, Mr. Stone.
Thank you.
Kathy Wasserman.
Yeah, she knows her way up here.
Thank you.
identify yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kathy Wasserman. I'm with the Alaska Municipal League. The League is in full support of Senate Bill 291. In most coastal communities, the harbor is the lifeblood of the community. And safe and improved harbors benefit the state as well as the community as they bring in marine fuel tax and raw fish tax. Much of that which is generated goes back to the state coffers. And safe and improved harbors also encourage the commercial fishing fleet to come into your community, the sport fishing fleet, visitors, and pleasure boaters. And then that also helps to provide sustainable communities. Again, we're very much in support of this. We think that the 50-50 match is also a good thing, as it encourages communities to maintain and take care of their harbors, as they then have a 50% buy-in on that amount of money. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions for the AML representative? Representative Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, back to Representative Wyrock's line of questioning. This only applies to those facilities which the state owned and transferred title.
Yes, sir. Yes, through the chair. Yes,
so that's the cut line. That's where the definition is, not whether it's harbor, dock, float, or whatever. But it's that was transferred. The ownership was transferred.
Yes, that's true. Many many facilities have been transferred in the last couple of years, and only those are eligible for this grant program.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
I wanted to generally associate my remarks with, or my sentiments on this issue with Representative Hawker, but even more expansively say that they're probably related to an intertide program as well. We need to include that for electrical distribution. But I also want to clarify that the last witness was not the sponsor of the bill, nor a person associated with the Department of Transportation that's going to be administering the bill, nor the harbors, the director of the state harbors folks. And the last witness's testimony was different in material respects from the sponsor and DOT's analysis of the bill. And so I think for the record, in fact, I think the last witness was mistaken in terms of her impression of what this bill is, and I think that the committee should rely on what DOT had testified and what the sponsor of the bill testified.
Representative Kelly.
Just to help my understanding, the place I was coming from is on page 3. On line 5B, the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities shall award a grant for every project that is for repair and major maintenance of a harbor facility that was transferred by the state to a municipality. Is that inconsistent with what DOT said before? I'm just trying to understand it. I'm not pushing for a particular position.
No, but applying for these grants, communities and administrators or public officials are going to be trying to figure out, maybe in certain terms or grant applications, what's correct or not correct and how they can award or not award a grant application. And I think it's important, the testimony I heard, that while the first tier of projects available for funds under this are those that were directly transferred by the state to an entity, community, and then there's a second tier available that is a bit, that has harbor and port needs, but may not have been necessarily transferred by the state to that entity, and therefore they would be eligible. It's just in the hierarchy of analysis, if there's a tie on worthiness of projects, they have to see who's submitting the grant application and whether it was transferred by the state to that entity. If it was, I think they have priority. If it wasn't, they receive lower priority, but it's not, they're excluded completely from consideration for the grant funds. And that's what I understood in listening both from the testimony of the sponsor and from DOT is how it would work.
Yeah. Didn't sound like a motion to disregard the testimony of AML, but not to pay, but to pay attention to the other two. Appreciate you noting that.
Mr. Chairman, if
Ms. Carno.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kim Carno, Staff Senator Bert Stedman. Through the chair, Representative Kelly, Representative Wyrock, I think you were on the right sentence, but you didn't go far enough. It goes, that sentence that Representative Kelly was reading into the record transferred by the state to a municipality before grants may be made for other proposed harbor facility projects. So the explanation given by DOT, the Harbors Association, and Representative Wyrock is the more complete definition.
The funds, you can go down to those lower, to those other categories.
Through the chair, Representative Kelly, each year DOT will prioritize the list of grant applications for that year, and your analysis is correct. They'll start with the top of the order and see how far they make it down the list.
Good. Works for me.
Thank you, Ms. Carter. Mr. Walsh.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name, for the record, is John Walsh, and I do represent a number of clients along the western or the eastern shores of the Bering Sea, and including the Bristol Bay Borough, the Northwest Arctic Borough, and two fishery development companies that hopefully in time will be coming to you or coming to the department with in assistance for this match. It is my understanding that, as the record is now clear, that there are two tiers established under the bill, and the priority of both Senator Stedman and Representative Thomas has been to address the needs of the harbors that have been transferred by the state and require additional funds to bring them to code compliance. And on behalf of the City of Skagway, we're supportive of that. As you go west, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, there are fewer and fewer state-funded harbors to start with. And indeed, in the Bristol Bay Borough, the community funded their own dock facility, which is an important issue that Representative Wyrock addressed, and is a fully functional dock, and members of the committee have been out there last year. That facility is under design, and we will be rebuilding. It's uncertain whether this program would apply in time for that construction effort, but I think it's important to note that that there are communities developing, and harbors are integral to their development on the coast of the Bering Sea, and we would hope that this program will assist them as we go forward. Knowing that there is a tiering system in the bill, but certainly recognizing that the needs are established for sure, the future and the development of pending needs are developing on the West Coast, and hopefully this program can either address it or, as Representative Hawker indicated, more of a statewide package that possibly includes local match to participate in. But it is a growing issue throughout the state, and the Bering Sea is providing, at least in some regards, the most hope for these communities to develop and sustain an economy. So this bill and this program, Harbor Development, will be integral to that development. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh. Any questions for Mr. Walsh? Anybody else wish to testify on the bill? We're going to close public testimony. Fiscal note. Zero fiscal note.
Yeah, I have a question on that fiscal note.
Yes, Representative Foster.
Yeah, if it's $99 million there, and if it's a 50-50 match, you'd think that there'd be like an informal commitment to commit at least $50 million, and if it's a note toward that end, wouldn't you? Or would you not? I don't know. I mean, this is going to cost something, and I got zero.
Through the chair, Representative Foster, the way the legislation is set up is it is subject to legislation appropriation. So right now there isn't money traveling with the piece of legislation. It's certainly the hope that the legislature will avail themselves of this vehicle and appropriate money. But
yeah.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, okay, I got you.
Well, what are the wishes of the committee? Mm-hmm. Foster?
Yes, sir. I'll go ahead and move SB 291 out of committee with the attached zero fiscal note within the visual recommendation.
Jeff? There's an objection?
Just for purposes of discussion,
But were you going to amend the fiscal note to increase it?
No. I didn't understand why it was zero. And it was as if the legislation didn't mean much without a grant program to it. But I don't have any harbors in there. I mean, you know, whatever you guys want to do is fine with me.
Okay. Hearing no objection, the bill and the attached fiscal notes, you've got the committee with individual recommendations and committee with stand at ease. We actually don't have before us House Bill 381. The CS isn't before us, but Mr. Eklund will talk about what we will be continuing later this afternoon and allow AHFC and other folks to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Peter Eklund, staff to Representative Meyer, co-chair of House Finance. Representative Stoltz was correct that House Bill 381, you will have a CS coming out this afternoon. Representative Meyer wanted to bring AHFC up this morning to talk a little bit about the bill to try to save some time this afternoon. So just in general, there's been a lot of discussion between law and revenue and legal and AHFC, just kind of coming up with some language that everybody would be comfortable with, allowing AHFC to go out and do some sell some more tobacco bonds. And so that CS should be forthcoming this afternoon. And with that, I'd just like to bring somebody from the AHFC, whoever's going to remain, up to just kind of talk conceptually about what you'll see in the CS this afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joe Dublin. I'm the Chief Financial Officer and Finance Director for the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. AHFC provides administrative services to the Northern Tobacco Securitization Corporation, or NTSC, which is the issuer of the tobacco bonds. That's the subject of House Bill 381. As Mr. Eklund discussed earlier, that there's some changes to the original bill that you'll see this afternoon. The original bill only allowed the sale of a residual interest of the tobacco receipts that the state receives under the master settlement agreement. Those residual interests start in about 2015, 2016. What that required NTSC to do was sell what's called capital appreciation bonds, or zero coupon bonds. They're commonly referred to as CABs. There's been some problems in the CAB market lately. Fresno came to market in early April with a transaction that didn't go well, cost them 60 to 90 basis points higher interest cost on that transaction than the previous transaction had experienced. And we weren't comfortable with the prospect of the only vehicle for selling bonds with this bill being a CAB, because that market is drying up quickly is the assertion we've had from experts in the field, and we didn't want to have that as our only vehicle. What the bill you see this afternoon will allow is for a full restructuring of the existing debt, as well as securitizing the residual interest that would revert to the state once the bonds pay off. It will, like I said, will include both refunding and pushing the term of the bonds out. So what we'll be doing is maximizing the amount of bond proceeds we can get for the 80% of the MSA that the state has currently pledged to the transaction. The initial bill we did, the initial two transactions we did, limited the amount because we wanted to ensure that we could get in each case, I believe it was $93 million on the first one, I believe it was $113 on the second one, in proceeds. In order to do that, we had to shorten up the debt service and not maximize the amount of proceeds we got. So that's what we're shooting for in this transaction. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd open it up to questions.
Representative Weinberg.
Yeah, just could you give a thumbnail of what happened? Was it San Jose?
It was Fresno, I believe, and if I said San Jose, no, through the chair.
You said Fresno.
Representative Weinberg, it was Fresno, and what happened was there's basically one investor in this market. It's a gentleman up in upstate, and a gentleman, he runs a fund up in upper state New York, the Oppenheimer Funds, and they got a little too aggressive on their what's called a haircut. In other words, there's an over-collateralization that's required. They got too aggressive and tried to lower that over-collateralization lower than this gentleman was comfortable with, and he balked. And basically somehow got around to him that he was the only investor. I don't know how he didn't know that already, because nobody else is buying these bonds. But when investors find out that they have an advantage, they take advantage of it. And that and to him it was 60 to 90 basis points through the scale. So it cost Fresno a lot of money. And the next transaction that came out, I believe, was a Cal County pool. And they improved a little bit because their percentages were better, but they came in 38 to 60 higher than the Nassau County, which was the one done prior to Fresno. So it was just a structuring error, I believe, on the part of the bank that did the transaction.
And then I think, Mr. Chairman, the testimony we had on this, I'm trying to think when we heard this bill, was it in March, February, March? There was some discussion about what the analysis was in October, and that by waiting we were several million dollars to the better. Are we to the better or the worse by where we are, just in terms of chronological timing of where we are?
Through the chair, Representative Whitrock, by October, do you mean 2005 or
2005.
2005. I think that we're probably a little worse off now than we would have been in October, in part because of the problem with the cabs. That vehicle, I don't believe, is available to us anymore at rates that are within the realm of reasonable, and the corporation would not recommend utilizing that vehicle at this point. So that portion has gone away. As far as the interest rates go, we're probably about, as far as spreads, I should say, go to the conventional market, I think we're probably about where we were then.
And then one last question, Mr. Chairman. Can you quantify the difference between October and now in terms of relative benefit?
Through the chair, Representative Whitrock, I don't have numbers as of October. I can tell you, as far as the overall interest rate market, the short-term rates obviously have come up a little bit, and that will cost the transaction as far as proceeds go. As far as quantifying that difference, I cannot at this time.
Okay. And then maybe for the next witness or some witness down the line, when this bill becomes law, when will the state be able to act to start moving on this?
Through the chair, Representative Whitrock, NTSC would be able to begin on the transaction as soon as it becomes effective, and it generally would take 90 days probably to actually sell the bonds and close the transaction, because there's some investor education and stuff that goes along with this. Probably not as much because we've gone through it already, but 60 to 90 days would be my guess.
Foster. Is there a Senate bill equivalent to this bill on the other side?
Through the chair, Representative Foster, I believe there is, but I believe the intent is for this House Bill 381 to be the vehicle that will move. There's one. Yeah, Senate Bill 243 is the companion.
Okay.
Any other questions for Mr. Dubler? You got your plant started yet?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we do.
Okay. I had a question for Mr. Eklund. Does this require voter approval?
Through the chair, Representative Whitrock, it does not. If you're talking about the public, yes.
Any other questions? Representative Foster.
I was wondering if Pete Kelly was going to buy us donuts if this passes. No, just kidding.
Well, the record show he was non-responsive. any other serious questions? Well, that was serious. Thank you, Mr. Mr. Fox.
Very serious.
Yeah. Were you going to testify, Mr. Fox? Okay.
No, sir. No. I think we've got covered.
Okay. Was there anybody else from the administration or the public that wanted to? Mr. Mitchell? Questions only? Anybody have any questions for Mr. Mitchell? Anybody else in the audience or online wanted to testify in this? Well, it's the intent to hold this bill over since we don't have a CS to move out, and public testimony will stay open.
Two, four, six, seven.
It's like the next meeting will be at 1:30, continuing the discussion of Senate Bill 305, the oil production, oil and gas production tax, and the continuation of this bill if everything stays on track. Anything else, Mr. Co-Chair? With that, this meeting is adjourned.
How come you're holding this last one here?
Just, well, that's the answer.